Hello, everyone. I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. Hi, friends.
Hi.
I think Bailey has some fun stuff to tell us.
I do. So, another podcast was talking about, like, weird hauntings on, like, movie sets. So, one of the ones that they were talking about was the original, The Omen movie. Have you seen that one?
Yes.
Okay. Drew, it's on Hulu. It's actually, like, pretty good.
Okay, I'll whenever I get time, I guess.
Okay. But I was watching it, and then I was at work, which I am now morning shift, so
yay!
That's gonna make recording a little easier. But I was like talking about it, and we have a vet nurse student who is of the Mexican descent, and he was saying that his grandma is a witch. And was like also mentioning how they like full on believe in La Llorona and like trolls and all these different like hexes and spells and everything, and it's we're having a great conversation. What'd she say?
I'm gonna teach you some hexes.
No thanks.
I was going to say, I don't think she should get mixed up with that. That sounds like a good way to get a curse or something.
Yeah.
You just got to stay on the good side. I'd be best buds with that person right now.
Yeah, but that's my fun little story because it's fucking nuts, but like it's really cool that...
That's not how you stay on their good side.
Well, no, like, it's, like, crazy, but, like, it's really cool to hear, like, kind of firsthand of, like, another culture's, like...
I get that.
Supernatural stuff.
So, I'm going to be telling you guys about Leonarda Cianciulli. Cianciulli. Also known as the Soap Lady Killer. Or the Soap Baker, or of Correggio.
Right, you teased us last week, and we were guessing how the soap came into play.
Side note, I love a good handmade soap.
So yes. Did Leonarda.
Tell us more.
So, to tell the story of Leonarda, I actually need to start before she was born. Because, you know.
Are we going to learn where soap was made?
No, just, like, nothing about how she was brought into this world was great. Mm. And it just kind of feel like it really paved the way for her to become Italy's first female serial killer.
Woo.
What title?
Yeah.
What can I first ask before you get into it? Like, what time frame are we looking at?
We're going to start in 1893.
Mm.
Okay. With Amelia Dinolfi. Amelia grew up in Montella, Italy, in a wealthy household. She was very beautiful, but she was naive. She had been shielded from many of the hardships of life due to her social standing and wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Much like how Jasmine from Aladdin was shielded from the realities of like the marketplace.
Ah,
you know how like she went to the when she escaped the palace, she like was like, "Oh, this kid's hungry. I'm gonna grab this apple and hand it to him."
And they were like, "Stealing?
No, now we're gonna chop off your hand."
Yeah,
that was very much how Amelia saw the world. Like she just didn't understand.
Yeah. She was sheltered.
Nice connection.
Exactly. So when I part of her naivete, how do you say that word, Lacey?
Naivete.
Is that a word?
Yeah. Looks like naive with T on the end.
She had an idealized vision of married life for much of her youth. She wanted, since she was small, she looked forward to being a wife. And like she, if she was alive in the 90s, she would be like Monica with like the binder full of like the perfect wedding stuff.
Okay.
From
I had a
Friends.
binder.
I forgot that I didn't say that. From Friends.
I had a binder.
Yes, you did.
But from your childhood?
No, God, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you're engaged, it's okay to have a binder, but like she had it from the very beginning. But when she reached time that age where it was like time to start getting married, she let her parents handle that arrangement.
For
They
six.
made the what?
So 16.
Yeah, like around then. They made matches and looked for potential suitors while she enjoyed attending parties with her friends. Little did Amelia know that she was being watched for some time by a local man named Mariano Cianciulli.
No.
Recognize the name?
No.
Yes, Amelia, no.
Yes. Cianciulli.
Chanchuli.
It's Leonardo's last name.
No, I know. I was kidding.
Oh, their sarcasm was so subtle.
Thank you.
Amelia had no idea he even existed because their social circles were nowhere near each other. Mariano was not the type of person who Amelia's family would allow association with because he was super lower class.
My God, is this really like Aladdin?
Yes, but not in
Is there singing?
a good way.
Not in like a romantic happy way.
It's very similar. And then like we're gonna go one way with Aladdin, and then this love story is gonna take a sharp other turn. You'll
Oh.
see. We'll get there.
Okay.
So the fact that they were in two different social circles, two different worlds, did little to sway Mariano's obsession. He often spent his time stalking her
Do we know how
and
old he was?
older than her for sure. It's the late 1800s, so there's,
So he's like 30.
well, what I was going to say is there's like not a whole, like I don't even know really Amelia's birthday. Like I don't know how old she was at this time, but she was time to get married age. Eventually, his obsession grew from lust to hatred. Presumably, this is from my opinion, I think that he probably just got tired of her ignoring him. And so he grew to hate her.
Probably didn't help that her parents were like hooking her up with like possible
Another suitor,
suitors.
and he was like watching her with other men. She's paying attention to other men, but
Name
never
is
him.
crazy.
So this is where the little love story is gonna not be like Aladdin. One evening in 1893, Amelia attended a dinner party with her friends and potential suitors, and then she returned home alone.
No.
While she was on her way home, hidden in the shadows and drunk, Mariano stalked her. Then he snuck up behind her, grabbed her, and dragged her behind some bushes.
No.
There, he beat and raped her.
It's not like Aladdin.
No, so this is where they kind of jut off into two different directions. During the assault, Amelia did not understand what was happening. This goes back to her being very naive, like she had no idea what was going on. And she like never was able to put a word to what she suffered. Like she didn't even know that it was called rape or anything. Like she just didn't know. Following the assault, Mariano fled the scene and left Amelia alone in an empty field. When the shock had passed, Amelia stood up and just returned home. She didn't tell anyone about what happened, likely because she didn't know what had happened. This left Amelia feeling ashamed and confused, depressed and fearful. She thought that she had done something wrong. She was raised in a very Catholic household, and that plus the Italian high society at the time had a very rigid view on sexuality. So she believed that she was the one who had done something wrong, and now she was damaged and unclean and unworthy and all that fun stuff that comes from
That.
the rigid view of sexuality. She was kind of just hoping that nobody would really find out and she would just kind of go on with her life. But it about 3, 4 months later, a bump started to form. Amelia was pregnant and her parents found out about what happened. They blamed her. They were enraged and they demanded to know who was responsible. This presented yet another problem for Amelia. Not only had she engaged in premarital sex, which even though it was not consensual at that time, they were like,
Yeah.
yeah. So that's the one problem. The other problem was is that now she's pregnant and unmarried. That's problem two. And then problem number three is that Mariano is so low status in Montello society that this would make her look even worse to her family. So it's like three strikes against her. So Amelia decided to try and accuse one or two other suitors who are a little bit more respectable. But eventually she did come clean and say it was Mariana Cianciulli. Upon discovering the truth, her parents were obviously less than pleased, but they called for the Cianciulli family to come to their home, Mariano included. Amelia's parents told the Cianciulli family the news, then explained that Mariano would have to marry Amelia to make this mistake right and preserve Amelia's honor. So Amelia or Mariano was delighted by this news. He's gotten what he's wanted. Now he has Amelia.
Well, that's
Amelia
exciting.
on the yeah. Yay for him. Amelia, on the other hand,
He
was
set a
horrified.
goal and he achieved it.
Yes. Amelia was horrified. She was being forced to marry and spend her life with her attacker. And also, like, it was not even the 1900s yet, so like she was definitely going to be having this baby. And for someone who had been like planning the perfect marriage, the wedding ceremony was equally disappointing. She'd been
No.
dreaming of this big, joyful wedding, but the proceeding was small and drab, and it seemed more like a funeral than a celebration of love.
That's
Amelia left the
upsetting.
church. Sorry?
I said that's upsetting.
Yeah. She
Not that.
left the church alongside the man she hated and to whom she had hardly ever spoken a word to. Like, they didn't talk. But now they're married.
He didn't want her for the conversation.
Nope. And after the wedding, her parents cut all ties to her.
Oh.
In their eyes, she had brought shame to their name, and she was never welcome in the D'Anolfi house again.
So
They were
does that,
just
sorry.
cut her off.
Does that like so that completely cuts her off from like their money too?
Yeah, she's
So
yeah. She
she's
went from
completely fucked over. Cool.
yeah, she went from like super wealthy, very happy, healthy, rich to now she all the way in the gutter with Mariano. On their wedding
Dick.
night, Amelia refused Mariano's desire to consummate their marriage, so he again beat her and raped her. And this was like a common theme for them. When Amelia failed to keep the house clean or cook meals to his liking, he would again beat her. So at this point, Amelia was pregnant, traumatized, and abandoned by everyone who had known and loved her. So she retreated inside herself. Mariano would go out, either working or drinking away his earnings, and she was left alone. She didn't have anyone to talk to. And in those early days of marriage, they lived like super poverty stricken. So as the months passed, you'd be like, oh, well, maybe she grew to love him. No, never did. Hated him each more every day. And eventually she grew to hate her unborn child that
Oh.
tied him to her. So on April 18th, 1894, Amelia went into labor. The birth was a long and agonizing one. Amelia was in labor for several hours and fell unconscious from her pains more than once. When the
Jesus.
midwife finally presented her with her newborn, Amelia could hardly stand to look at the baby. So that brings us to Leonardo Cianciulli.
Oh, cool. What a
Is
great
she loved?
start.
Yeah. So, like, on top of Amelia, like, already hating the baby because that was her connection to Mariano, it sounds like labor sucked.
Yeah.
Paley just sighed. Just.
Yeah, you know, passing out a few times from their pain. Yeah. Not that
So now let's talk about Leonardo. That's why we're here.
Was she a daddy's girl?
Yay.
Did he love her at least?
I know that she's a serial killer, and that's why you're telling us about her, but you're setting me up to feel sympathetic for her.
I will say that, like, she doesn't kill anybody until she's about like 50. So the first 50 years of her life, you can be sympathetic towards her.
Okay.
She doesn't kill her dad.
Leonardo's young life was anything but ideal. Her mother, Amelia, never made any attempt to conceal her resentment for her child. Amelia blamed Leonardo for ruining her life. Had it not been for Leonardo, Amelia would not have been forced to marry Mariano, because then nobody would have known that Mariano had raped her and she wouldn't have been cut off from her family. So it was all Leonardo's fault.
Right.
Leonardo would recall being frequently beaten and insulted for any minor infraction. Amelia often told Leonardo that she was worthless and would never amount to anything. Nothing she did was ever good enough for her mother, so at an early age, Leonardo just stopped trying. Almost nothing is known about Leonardo's relationship with her father. Mariano was practically a ghost to her. He was often away from the house, and the few times she did see him, he was drunk. One evening, in around 1900, just like great sometime in the 1900, Mariano did not return home.
Oh, nice.
So Amelia took her 6-year-old daughter, Leonardo, and they went out in search of him. They found him in one of his usual drinking places. Mariano was passed out, but still breathing, but was unable to be aroused. So Amelia
Oh,
and
she's trying to arouse
six-year-old,
him.
I just, wake him up.
Yeah, roused.
Oh, is it unable to be roused?
Yeah, but I like it the way you
Well,
said it.
he wasn't able to be aroused
He
either.
was not in the mood for anything.
No, they couldn't wake him up, so what would they do?
On either end.
Yeah, exactly, Bill.
No.
So I'm just going to keep reminding you that Leonardo is 6 at this time because
Oh no.
Lacey, you have like a 6-year-old niece, right? So just
Yeah,
imagine.
almost.
Yeah,
Okay.
just imagine.
I don't know if I want
Amelia
Who am I
and
supposed to
six
imagine?
year I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Amelia and 6-year-old Leonardo brought him back home. They carried him in his comatose state, where Amelia kept him in a separate room. She just like put him in the back room and left him there unattended, and he died.
Am I supposed to
Huh.
feel bad for that?
No, just like
Okay, great.
very cold.
They brought him in from outside, which I think is nicer than what he deserves.
I think more feel bad for the 6-year-old that had to carry her
Oh,
on Connie's dad home, where they could just put him in the back room to die.
I was obviously, like all of us, feeling very, very sympathetic toward Amelia because, like, her early life sucked. Losing sympathy for her as she is being awful to her daughter. But also, kind of keep in mind, like, she didn't have any options at the time.
No, no.
There was
I think that what happened to Amelia really sucked. I think, though, that she could have, you know, not been an asshole
out on her daughter.
Her daughter, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else who was a victim of, what's his face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, following Mariano's death, I'm sure you can imagine Amelia felt relieved.
Sure.
But it was short-lived because, you know.
She wouldn't have an income.
Yeah. But, so Amelia thought, her thought was, now that Mariano's dead, I can go back to my parents. And I can go back to, like.
That lifestyle.
Yeah.
I feel like her parents aren't going to be on board for that. That's my guess.
This seems like this is something that has been in her head, probably with her naiveness, that she built this up in her head that, like,
if he just
this will solve all my problems. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's gone, I can go back to my life. And that's not why your parents disowned you, sweetie.
No. They still considered her an embarrassment, so they turned her away.
Bummer.
I feel like I spoiled that because earlier I said that she would never be welcome in their house again. And
I mean, but also, anyone, I think most people have a good understanding of what it was, the times back then, and how
I think we all kind of guessed
rape and sexual assault was looked at, and especially if she ruined the family name, like, they're not accepting her back.
So, without Mariano's paycheck, Leonardo and Amelia, they started living, their poverty became like dire. And this, you know, stress on the family worsened Amelia's resentment towards Leonardo.
Sure.
Somehow it was her fault still. Luckily, the misery and abuse that Amelia suffered at the hands of Mariano did not diminish her beauty. So, like, the reason Mariano got obsessed with her in the first place, and the reason why she had so many suitors at the beginning of the story, was because she was very pretty.
Okay.
Bless you.
Thank you. It was a cough.
Yeah, bless you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but luckily, Mariano didn't ruin that for her. So, Amelia quickly replaced him with a new, kinder husband.
Oh, okay.
Did he stay kind?
Well, he was kind to Amelia. Oh. I think he saw the way Amelia spoke to Leonardo, and he was like, oh, that's how we treat her.
So he wasn't going to go out of his way to be, like, the nice stepdad to a kid whose mom didn't want her.
He kind of just followed Amelia's lead. So he joined her in both neglecting and abusing Leonardo.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So when Leonardo was 13, she attempted to hang herself, but was quickly found and cut down.
I'm surprised they cut her down a little bit.
Well, I don't think Amelia found her and cut her down. I don't know who did. But based on this next sentence, I think you would agree that Amelia was not the one who did it.
Oh.
Amelia expressed her disappointment that her daughter did not succeed in killing herself that day.
Yeah, I don't think it was her.
No, I don't think that she was the one who did it.
She's really become awful.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She's not a fan anymore.
The Yelp review for Amelia would be.
She honestly, I came back to update
the Yelp review after another visit.
Her thought process would probably have been like, "Oh, she can't even like do that right."
Probably.
My God.
So, about a year later, Leonardo tried to kill herself again by swallowing glass.
Oh, what? Why the fuck?
Right? Like an awful way. She was unsuccessful and just ended up making herself sick.
Oy.
But meanwhile, Amelia, Now, so she, her new husband, who I could not find any information on other than that he was nicer to her. He was like, so Mariana was like bottom level. This new husband was slightly above him on the
Okay.
social ladder. He was a bit more respectable. So Amelia sought to try and climb her way back up the social ladder by like using her daughter, the one that she hates.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So now that the dad is slightly higher, their prospects for marrying off Leonardo are like slightly
Oh,
higher.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so like if they were still on like the bottom rung, they would only be able to go up one step. But now that like they're up one step, now they can go up another step. And so Emilia was gonna worm her way back into her life that
Okay. Like
she
in
missed.
theory, that could go well for Leonardo. They marry her off to somebody who's not as much of an asshole as everybody else in her life.
I
I
don't
don't
think they'd
imagine it's gonna
care
go
though
that
with
well
who
for
she
her.
ends up with.
No, like I don't
I
think they
feel
would
like.
care. I just feel like it's a way for her to escape her house. Like the best way for her to get out is to be married off to somebody.
I think the best thing that they could have done was to let Leonardo in on the plan.
Oh, God.
They didn't tell her. They were just like, let's do it. Well, she's fine. Okay. So, second husband was an improvement. He earned a bit more money, wasn't a drunkard, but it still wasn't enough to get them out of their financial straits. And
Okay.
Amelia was getting desperate. And so, yeah, so she wasn't welcome back into high society, but maybe she could get her daughter welcomed in there, and then she would kind of like latch on to that success. So behind Leonardo's back, Amelia began meeting with families for tea and at social gatherings on the prowl for any man who looked like he came from wealth. By the time Amelia started making matches for her, Leonardo had already met someone she liked very much.
Uh-oh.
Raffaele? Sorry?
I said, uh-oh.
Yeah. So do you think that Leonardo making her own choices is going to make Amelia happy?
No.
No.
Raffaele Pensardi was quite a bit older than Leonardo, and his job as a registry office clerk lacked prestige, but he was one of the few people in her life to have ever treated her gently.
Ugh. She's not gonna be allowed to marry him.
Unaware of her mother's wishes, Leonardo accepted Raffaele's marriage offer.
Okay.
So she just ignored her mom and married him anyway.
Oh, so she
Yeah.
did
Yeah.
marry. Okay,
They
I thought
got.
it'd be like she accepted it and then her mom
No,
beat
no,
him
no.
off with a stick.
No, they got married in 1917 when Leonardo was about 23. This enraged Amelia, who told her daughter that she had placed a curse on her and Raffaele for ruining her life again.
I'm tired of
Yeah.
her.
I'm so glad that she cares so much about other people and not all just about herself.
Despite being cursed by her mother, Leonardo was finally happy. She was superstitious as hell. I will put that out there. This is going to be a recurring theme, her superstition.
Okay.
But she was away from Amelia, and she was with someone who actually loved her.
Oh.
So Leonardo and Raffaele moved in together in Montello, and Leonardo actually never saw her mother again.
Good.
Yeah.
Yay.
But her mother had done so much psychological damage, Leonardo was constantly paranoid. She was worried about disappointing or irritating Raffaele and everyone else. But I do want to note that despite Leonardo being on edge and paranoid, Raffaele was reportedly patient and gentle with her, and they had a very loving relationship.
Oh, well, good.
Like, he was a good guy.
Wait,
And
but how does
Leonardo
she...
was constantly second guessing herself and stuff like
I'm
that.
already internally justifying that she's gonna become a serial killer.
How,
Again,
wait, But she's no. Hold on. But she's having a good relationship now. Like, what else goes wrong that turns her into one?
So much. Oh my God, so much, guys. Remember
No.
that curse?
Oh, the
Keep the
curse.
curse in mind, because that shit might be real. Because her life is, it doesn't get better. So, because Raffaele was so great, Leonardo became her own worst enemy. Every mistake, whether real or just perceived, she would just criticize herself. She just like was the worst. She just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Despite all that, Raffaele stayed supportive and sympathetic throughout their marriage. But so after the couple moved in together, Leonardo began having seizures.
Oh.
It's believed that she had an untreated illness as a child, and the seizures were a result of that. I
Okay.
wonder if it's from her attempt at suicide from hanging. Like the lack of oxygen to the brain did some neurological damage that caused seizures. However, at the time, Leonardo believed the seizures and the subsequent headaches were a result of her mother's curse.
Well, maybe.
She also
Yeah.
believed the curse was affecting Raffaele
Would.
negatively.
I don't know.
So prior to their marriage, Raffaele was a bit higher on the social ladder than Leonardo, not as high as Amelia would have liked, but higher. Anyway, because Raffaele married someone lower class than him, his co-workers and superiors at work kind of looked poorly on his marriage and his choices. Whenever there was an opportunity for a promotion at work, he was passed over.
Everybody sucks.
I just remembered that I haven't been flipping through the slideshow for you guys.
Not at all.
So that's Leonardo as a young lady, and then that's her about 20 years later.
He definitely looks like an Italian grandma in that second picture.
Yes.
Look at her, Bailey.
Yeah, she could be our grandma, but shut
Oh.
up.
And then
Thank you.
that's Montello, where they lived.
Okay. In the ankle of the
Yeah, I was gonna say right in the ankle. And then
Guys, I got my milkshake.
that's Leonardo and Raffaele.
Oh, okay. I won't make fun of him then. I
How
was
old
gonna when
is
I thought it was Mariano. Why does he look like a lost little old man? He looks so cute. He's like a head shorter than her, too. What a
Yeah,
cutie
and
pie.
he was super nice to her. Because he
Italian
didn't have
grandpa
friends.
and his lady friend.
So, with the seizures and Raffaele's work life, Leonardo sought help regarding the curse. She turned to the Romani community.
Ooh.
She had heard that they were able to help with things like these, so one afternoon she went to a local fair and spoke to a fortune teller. At the time, Leonardo, in addition to the seizures and headaches, she also had depression and anxiety, all of which were undiagnosed because it was the 1900s.
That tracks.
But because of like all of that, she truly believed that she was dying. So she asked the fortune teller straight up, "Am I going to die?" The woman read Leonardo's palm and told her that she was not going to die anytime soon.
Oh,
In
good.
fact, she was going to live a nice long life. However, the life would be full of sadness.
Oh, no.
Would you
No.
like to know? She didn't just end there. The fortune teller went into detail.
You
She
paid for.
said she was, she said, "You're going to outlive every single one of your children."
No.
Currently, Leonardo had none, but that's good to know for the future, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Even if you could see that about somebody, why would you tell them?
Because
You know?
they're paying you to say that.
I would
Yeah.
tell so many nice lies.
Just lie about everything.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you can imagine that that visit with the fortune teller didn't really help her anxiety at all. Like, oh, I'm not gonna die, but great, I'm full
All my
life full of
kids will.
sadness. Great. It actually just solidified the belief that the curse was in fact real,
Oh, the curse.
and that her mother had successfully like cursed her.
I think she did.
However, it did not stop Leonardo from wanting to be a mother. She wanted to be the exact opposite of her own mother. Like, she wanted to be the best mom.
Aww.
So, after 3 years of trying, Leonardo and Raffaele did finally conceive a child in 1920.
Oh, no.
As soon as they found out about the pregnancy, Leonardo became even more anxious. Because, you know, the fortune teller told her that her baby was going to die. The anxiety worsened her seizures.
Awesome.
Which I know that you've, like, the seizures resulted in falling.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 months into the pregnancy, Leonardo had a seizure and fell. And as a result, had severe abdominal pain and started bleeding. She went to the doctor and was informed that she had had a miscarriage.
Mm.
Which obviously devastated Leonardo. Raffaele, being the most supportive and amazing hubby that he was, suggested that maybe they needed a fresh start. Perhaps moving further away from her mother would help ease her anxiety and stress.
I like him.
So they packed up and they left Montello. They kind of bounced around in a couple towns looking for work before they settled down. They eventually settled in Raffaele's hometown of Lariano in 1921. It was located 100 miles away from Montello. So 100 miles away from her terrible, terrible mom. They saved up enough money to buy a small house, and they both found work, so things were looking good. After a few months, Leonardo started to feel more at ease and less anxious. Less anxiety and stress led to less seizures.
Okay.
In 1922, Leonardo got pregnant and gave birth to her son Giuseppe.
Oh, no. No, I'm not going to get excited about this.
It's a happy thing.
No, fortune teller already told me what's going to happen.
They could be wrong.
I don't think so. She was cursed. I will not get attached to Giuseppe.
From the moment he was born, Leonardo was determined to be the best mom ever. Mm. She devoted all her time and attention to Giuseppe. Unfortunately, coupled with the history of anxiety and depression, the idea of the curse from her mother and the fortune teller's premonition and all the stress that comes from being a new parent, Leonardo's determination soon became more of an obsession, and she became super overprotective and very hypervigilant and just like helicopter parent on Giuseppe. Additionally, because of the pregnancy, she had to leave her job, and the family was now relying solely on Raffaele's paycheck. So even though she didn't want to be away from Giuseppe, Leonardo really wanted to find a job just to add a level of security to the household. And more importantly, a level of security for Giuseppe's life.
Okay.
So, like, she spent her days worried that something bad would happen and they'd lose all their money. And then, so she went to work, and then she spent the time at work worried that something bad was going to happen to Giuseppe while she was away.
No new mom thinks that she's doing that a good job, so.
You think that this is all normal?
I think it was already abnormal, and then the normal new mom stuff made it worse.
Yes. And I feel like every new parent, I mean, I'm not there yet, but like, as an aunt, I'm always scared, like, oh my god, I'm gonna hurt my niece.
Aww.
By accident. Well,
my kids are...
Yeah, I only have two nieces, and they're yours.
That's right. The other one's a nephew. Sorry.
Yeah.
Leonardo had trouble finding work because she lacked many skills. And also, she was a woman, and that's a real disadvantage in the early 1900s. As you guys remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a bitch back then.
She did eventually find a job as a cleaner at a tavern. So while Leonardo was away from Giuseppe, she spent most of her time riddled with fear that something was going to happen to him. Like, she legitimately had crippling anxiety. Like, she barely functioning.
She would have benefited when, from therapy today, I think.
Oh, for sure. Maybe medication, I would say.
For sure, medication.
Especially when she was home, she spent all her time smothering him. As a young child, he just thought that that was normal. But as he got older and started seeing how other mothers behaved, he started viewing this overprotection as a problem. Like, she began, like, she was so, she would isolate him from other children. He had no friends. It was like mama's
kids are
boy,
gross.
But not. Yeah, and they're always sick, especially in the 1900s.
Yeah. He could get sick.
And then they died. So, if you got sick back then, you died.
Meanwhile, Leonardo and Raffaele continued to try and build their family. But their attempts kept ending in miscarriage after miscarriage, or just unsuccessful. I mean, it took 3 years just to get pregnant the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So all like the miscarriages and the unsuccessful pregnancies, all that didn't ease her anxiety or her obsession over Giuseppe.
Shocking.
But finally, they had a string of good luck. Leonardo gave birth to two girls and then a son, like right after each other. Right. Bam, bam, bam.
I'm suspicious.
So Leonardo and Raffaele had two sons and two daughters at this point, and Leonardo again started to relax and stop stressing so much over the curse. Because, okay. Like, it was like a wave. Like, whenever it was something good that was happening, she'd be like, the curse isn't real. And then one bad thing happens, and she's like, the whole fucking world's coming apart because of this curse. But at this point, she was happy. She had two boys, two girls, a husband, everything was good. But then the children started getting sick.
No. See, this is why I didn't
the
get
youngest
attached.
Son. Huh?
This is why I didn't get attached.
You're going to find out in a second, but Giuseppe's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. You seem very suspicious.
Are any of us really okay?
The youngest son started to develop rashes. And then
eczema.
The girls, huh?
Eczema.
Maybe. Then one of the girls got a really bad cough. Her lungs were full of fluid.
Tuberculosis.
And she couldn't breathe while laying down. So Leonardo would stay up every night just holding her upright so her daughter could sleep and breathe.
Just prop her up on
dying.
Some pillows.
It was the 1900s. I don't think they had pillows.
What?
I don't think knowing what I mean, you know Leonardo at this point. Do you think she would have been?
She would not. I feel like she would not have been able to sleep.
She wouldn't
baby.
Have been able to relax.
But so she's got seizures on top of crippling anxiety and depression, and now she's going to be sleep deprived.
I think she's been sleep deprived since Giuseppe was born. I don't think she's been sleeping.
Literally, I said, so now, in addition to all the bad luck and her kids being sick, Leonardo is now not getting any sleep.
I can see how she turned into a serial killer.
Unfortunately,
I would have already, I think.
Unfortunately, the little girl did end up succumbing to her illness.
Oh.
And she died.
What was her name? Do we have names for the other kids?
No.
Do we know what officially she died like of?
No, but it's not, like, fluid on the lungs, so maybe pneumonia?
Mm.
A few months later, Raffaele and Leonardo awoke to find their youngest son had died in his sleep.
Oh.
I think the general consensus with him was that he died of SIDS.
Mm.
So, Leonardo was inconsolable, understandably.
Mm-hmm.
She left her job and devoted all her time to her remaining children, which was Giuseppe and one more girl. A few months later, the remaining daughter contracted the same coughing illness and died, just as her sister did. What, Bailey?
Like, I get that she's, like, upset and everything, but people have so many kids back then because they, like, knew that some wouldn't make it to adulthood.
Yeah, but I think
it easier though. They just
yeah. I was gonna say, it doesn't make it easier, but then also
she still
like,
has two.
I think she I could envision in her mind the death of one of her children being her failure. And because she was so critical of herself, I think that she really took the any kind of, like, any mistake that she made, perceived or real, really affected her because of all the trauma.
This is Amelia's fault.
Oh, for sure.
Also, and I mean,
this is Amelia's
If we want to backtrack it even further, I think it all started with Mariano.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now Leonardo is back down to just Giuseppe. And as far as she was concerned, this was just more proof that the curse was very much real. Raffaele kind of recognized that Leonardo was most happy when she was a mom. So he convinced her to have more children. He was like, you seem happy when you have babies. So let's just keep having them. Obviously, Leonardo was a little reluctant at first, but they did start trying again. A few years passed before they were successful. Leonardo successfully delivered 5 healthy boys. Again, boop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop.
Jesus Christ.
Not quintuplets, just right after each other. Unfortunately, all 5 of those boys died without explanation.
Amelia!
Jesus.
God damn it, Amelia! So, do we know what time period this is?
Like the 1920s.
Okay.
So, the grief drove her deeper and deeper into depression and despair. And she's just becoming more paranoid, more anxious, more upset. And it was so bad that Giuseppe couldn't let his guard down for even a minute with her because she was constantly with him. Oh, we have a special guest.
You have a dog.
She's shaking and farting a little bit.
Oh, okay. Luckily, at this point, Raffaele had made several connections in the community through his job because he was a really hard worker. And, like, he was just like look at the picture of him. A really good guy. How could you not like him?
I'm going to be real honest with you and say that when you put this picture up, it looked to me like, you know how they used to take pictures of, like, dead people? Like, they'd prop them up and take their picture.
Oh, my God, Lacey.
Look at him. He's gone waxy. Cute old Italian grandpa, but like he does not look like he's living in this picture. It looks like I was like, oh, it's a picture that Leonardo took with one of her victims after she killed them.
Anyway, because of all the connections, he was able to find her more work so that she could kind of get out of the house. And she worked as an after-hour cleaner at a local bank. I think the thought process from Raffaele was to get her out of the house, get her to focus on something other than their deceased children and Giuseppe. Leonardo liked the job. Her only complaint was that she had to pay for the cleaning supplies out of pocket. So they'd like deduct the cost for the products from her paycheck, leaving her with very little to take home. Mm-hmm. So in an effort to save money, she began making her own soap and cleaning supplies. But even that wasn't really much of an improvement in what she was taking home. And she was still obsessing over what was happening to her son when she wasn't there. So like, she liked it, but like, she didn't see the benefit of it, you know?
She's being a really typical like Italian mom, that they're just mama's boys.
Imagine if she lived in the time of cell phones. She would have so many tracking apps on his phone, and she would be texting and calling him all the time.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Monster-in-Law? Mm-hmm. Like Jane Fonda, she like pages her son like 10 times a day. That would be her.
Yeah.
So one evening, after everyone had left the bank for the evening, she went into the manager's office, and she created a fake account for herself in one of the bank ledgers and transferred a good bit of money into her account.
Good for her. I'm not even mad.
Exact amount is unknown, but it was described as not being subtle.
Mm. Oh.
Like, it was an extravagant amount. Like, it'd be like if you transferred, like, $50,000 into your own account, they'd be like,
ooh. It would set up some flags.
I won the lottery.
We noticed that. So it's like the mid-1920s, and Banks kept meticulous books, so they noticed the discrepancy right away. And when she came back to work the next afternoon, she was met by the police, who arrested her on a charge, on a fraud charge. So she didn't even get 24 hours away with this crime. That's how not so subtle she was. The arrest and the criminal charge were a source of embarrassment and anxiety for Leonarda, but she quickly realized that this could negatively affect Raffaele, and more importantly, Giuseppe. Raffaele had been well-respected at his job and in the community, and Leonarda was worried that they'd try and claim that Raffaele was involved in the fraud. Mm. So, and, you know, if they arrested him, he, or, you know, just any kind of shit talk, he could lose his job. And then who would support Giuseppe? Giuseppe. As a result of realizing this, which is great hindsight by Leonarda, she made sure that everyone knew that she acted alone and Raffaele was not involved. Leonarda went before a judge in 1927. She claimed that she had been seized by madness at the time.
Curse. I think it was the curse. It wasn't her fault. This is Amelia's fault.
She was seized with madness.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first time we've ever tried to use
the insanity defense? I don't know. She was found guilty and sentenced to 18 months in an institution that had once served as a nunnery and was still operated by the church.
Well, that could have been worse.
Oh, good.
This institution was not a great place.
Oh, no.
The nuns would often mistreat the, I don't know, prisoners, residents? What do you call them?
Say inmates.
Inmates?
Patients?
It wasn't like a jail.
Oh, feels like jail.
People.
So, like, okay.
Leonarda was less than fazed by this because, you know, her upbringing, she was used to this being mistreated. So she took the physical and psychological abuse like a champ.
Said no after, one ever.
After a little over a year, Leonarda was released and returned home to find that her fears had come true. Despite her attempts to distance her crime from Raffaele, he had lost his job anyway. His reputation was destroyed, and he had grown a bit resentful of Leonarda by this time. This was the first time that he openly criticized her. And, I mean, she was already feeling shame and, like, terrible about what she'd done, but this was like, whoa, now he's finally saying something too.
Yeah.
But also, like, they were sort of in, like, an okay spot in their, like, relationship. He had a job, she had a job. Like, why try to steal and ruin it?
Seems like a silly risk that she took.
Yeah, I think that she was just like, there's no point in me working here. Let me make a point by, you
know. Make it worth it.
Yeah.
So, following Leonarda's release from her institution, because Raffaele's whole reputation was destroyed and stuff, again, I think that they felt like they needed to get another fresh start. So, Raffaele was able to borrow a small amount of money, and they moved out of town. Like, they felt there was nothing left for them in Lariano. Because, I mean, he didn't have a job. His reputation was ruined. So they relocated to Lacedonia to start fresh. Raffaele found a clerical job, and they quickly were able to afford a small house in a rural village. Once they settled in, Raffaele began to forgive Leonarda, and they were able to return to their normal loving relationship. So I think that he was kind of just like stressed out and was like angry at her for causing that stress. But then once the stress went away, he forgave her. Sorry, I just realized. There you go. That's what he looks like again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So upon settling in, Leonardo quickly got pregnant, and they had a healthy baby.
Okay.
Soon after, she became pregnant again and delivered another baby. So,
healthy.
At this point, the children seemed to be doing okay, and her and Raffaele's relationship was doing better. They had put her mistakes in the past, choosing, I think, to pretend like they hadn't happened. So things seemed to be going good, but Leonardo was unable to get over the paranoia and the feelings of anxiety. I think at this point, she's kind of like, every time I start to relax, something bad happens. So she just wasn't going to relax anymore.
Yeah, but she was so chill before.
Yeah, right. So she began to frequent the camps of the Romani people that occupied the local woods. It was during her visits with the Romani that she was taught how to read palms and took up the art of fortune telling. Whenever she could, Leonardo would have her fortune read, which did little to help her anxiety. About 2 years after they came to Lacedonia, this fortune teller looked at Leonardo's hands and told her, quote, "In your right hand, I see a prison. In your left, a criminal asylum."
Neither is great.
No. It seems like the fortunes are not. You're going to live a long, happy life.
Yeah.
Surrounded by love.
She should stop getting her fortune told.
I think so, too. So, on July 23rd, 1930, a massive earthquake occurred in an area known as Irpinia. It was a magnitude 6.6 earthquake and caused 1,404 deaths. The greatest intensity of the quake was recorded in three towns, one of which was Lacedonia.
Of course it was.
Leonardo and Raffaele's home was completely destroyed as a result. They were forced to relocate, and they ended up moving to the city of Correggio. The residents of Correggio welcomed all the people who were displaced by the earthquake, and they were very hospitable. They helped the new people find homes and jobs, including Raffaele. So Raffaele found a good job, and the children were healthy, making friends and doing well in school. But Leonardo was not happy. So, of course, she blamed the curse for the earthquake. And before, the curse just affected her and her family. But now, in her eyes, the curse had affected all these other people's lives, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, the curse was worsening. Yes. And this is the,
curses do.
They get worse.
Yeah, I don't really think they get better.
Fair, but I will say that, I think that it kind of helped. This was, like,
yeah, kind of a break out for them.
Yeah, and I think that this is something in disguise. What is it?
A blessing in disguise.
Yeah, because this event caused Leonardo to feel defeated and just kind of give up, which sounds bad, but she believed that she couldn't outrun the curse, and regardless of what she did, bad things were going to happen anyway. Okay. So she gave up being hypervigilant and overprotective of her children, which kind of turned out to be a good thing. Because she wasn't hyperfixated on the children anymore, Leonardo was able to make friends in the community.
Right.
And she started participating in events, and she and Raffaele eventually became a very well-liked and well-respected couple in the community. So, like, after she was like, oh, the curse is just gonna fuck me left and right anyway, so I'm just gonna stop freaking out about it.
Pretty much.
And now everybody likes her.
She just had to accept it. It's just, everything's fine. It is what it is.
Yeah. Leonardo eventually opened a small shop and became very popular and known as a nice and gentle woman, a doting mother, and a nice neighbor. Leonardo at this time was in her mid-40s, out of And out of a total of 17 pregnancies, 3 resulted in miscarriages, 10 died as young children, and only 4 would survive into adulthood.
It's kind of horrifying. I don't know.
Yeah. Those who would survive were named Giuseppe. Mm-hmm. Lazy. He thought he was going to die.
Uh-huh. He still could.
Biagio, Norma, and Bernardo.
Okay.
But by 1940, Italy became involved in World War II. So in 1939, the Italian military needed more soldiers, so they employed a campaign of nationalism to convince young men to join. One of the young men who was convinced was Giuseppe.
Oh no.
He wanted to fight for his nation, as well as seize the opportunity to get away from his mother, who was less overbearing, but still a smother mother.
She just loves him so much.
I know. And
she wants to go to war to get away from you.
Yeah, as I'm sure you can imagine, Leonardo was less than enthused about the news that her beloved son had joined the army. It was worsened by the fact that Giuseppe hadn't actually told her. She'd heard from the neighbors at the market that Giuseppe joined.
Giuseppe.
That's not cool.
No. And so she'd managed to keep Giuseppe safe from harm for like 2 decades, and now he was signing up to join a violent war. She tried to stop Giuseppe, but he was an adult, so there was little she could do to prevent him from going. So what could she do to keep him safe?
The war.
Did you say end the war?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that is a good option. She chose to look through some old texts on the occult and other superstitions to get some ideas. And she eventually found what she believed to be the solution in a book called The Law of Equivalent Exchange.
According to number 2. So.
Right.
Pretty sure we were doing that on our side too.
According to the book, she would have to offer another life as an exchange to ensure Giuseppe's safety.
I think she'll do. Oh, I forgot. I forgot you were telling us about the serial killer. I've gotten really caught up in her story.
Yeah.
Lacey's like, this is just a sad story of a woman that keeps losing her kids. A lady who
eventually overcame. But I forgot that there's more going on here. Oh, Leonardo.
I will say, Leonardo wasn't super gung-ho about human sacrifice. But, God. She put a lot of work into keeping Giuseppe alive. So, she wasn't about to stop now. So,
she's nothing if not dedicated. I think that's the only good thing that we can say.
Way to swing it, Bill. She does
love her son.
So Leonardo began collecting the ingredients she'd need to make a poison, while also thinking about who would be the best victim. In 1939, that's the year that we're in, she decided on a woman named Faustina Setti.
Sorry.
Guys.
Do you want to cough?
I decided to piggyback off it.
I'm trying to tell you about Faustina.
I breathed and spit and needed to cough, else I would die or have pneumonia. Lacey's just Lacey.
Seized an opportunity. Continue.
Can I continue?
Okay. Yeah.
Faustina was a 76-year-old spinster at the time. She didn't have a lot of family and not a lot of ties to the community. Leonardo knew of Faustina because she was a regular customer of her soap shop. They'd chat during visits, and while chatting, Faustina confided in Leonardo that she was very lonely. Because of this fact, Leonardo was able to convince her that she was putting Faustina out of her that she was putting Faustina out of her misery.
I thought she got Faustina on board. I was like, oh, it's not that bad then. She got her to agree.
Yeah, she agreed.
So just a lonely old lady, and she was like, she'll be fine.
Yeah, no, that's not what she did. So one day, she invited Faustina to the shop and told her that she found a man who was interested in meeting her.
Oh.
Leonardo told Faustina that she'd shown this man a photo of Faustina, and he immediately fell in love with her beauty. This thrilled Faustina.
Well, sure.
And she immediately made arrangements to travel to the man's home in Pola. Leonardo told Faustina to write letters to her family members so they wouldn't worry about her, like, with her absence or her safety.
Yeah.
So Faustina did, and Leonardo promised to send the letters for her. So, the next morning, Faustina was supposed to leave for Pula. She went to Leonardo's shop before her journey to compensate her with 530 Italian money.
Is it like lira or something?
Yes, maybe.
Okay.
But that translates to about 9,500 today.
Okay.
She was compensating her for her help. Faustina was so excited, but also nervous, so Leonardo invited her to sit down and have a drink of wine to calm her nerves. But the wine was drugged. Faustina started to feel drowsy and ill, and then grew to be immobile, like she was paralyzed. So Leonardo left the room and returned with an axe.
No, no, no.
Later, Leonardo would tell authorities that her intention was to swing the axe and cause a single blow to the back of her head to kill her quickly.
That probably didn't work, did it?
She misjudged, and the axe came down hard into Faustina's shoulder, shattering her clavicle.
Oh.
Faustina just began screaming in agony, so panicked, Leonardo just began to wail on her with the axe.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Afterwards, she said her only thoughts at the time were of Giuseppe's safety.
I feel like he would not appreciate her doing any of this for him.
I feel like in that moment, she was probably more concerned about the screaming woman.
Yeah.
Than thinking
like,
about
I've got to get her to stop screaming.
Yeah. And...
And then later was like, I did it for Giuseppe.
Yeah. Like, that's like her internal monologue saying that. But she should work on her aim.
She does.
Oh.
You told me she poisoned people with soap and now she's bringing out an axe. I'm very confused.
No, I never said she poisoned people with soap.
I think that was one of our guesses.
Yeah, you guys were guessing what the soap maker of Correggio, the serial killer, did. I didn't tell you anything. Just wait a second. She then dragged Faustina's body across the room and cut her remains into 9 separate pieces while collecting all the blood in a large bowl. In her memoir, entitled An Embittered Soul's Confessions, Leonardo described what happened next in her official statement. Quote, I threw the pieces into a pot, added 7 kilos of caustic soda, which I had bought to make soap, and stirred the whole mixture until the pieces dissolved in a thick, dark mush that I poured into several buckets and emptied into a nearby septic tank. As for the blood in the basin, I waited until it had coagulated, dried it in the oven, ground it, and mixed it with flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs, as well as a bit of margarine, kneading all the ingredients together.
No.
I made lots of crunchy tea cakes and served them to the ladies who came to visit, though Giuseppe and I also ate them. And
she made blood cakes.
Does that count as cannibalism?
Blood cakes!
I think because she is eating part of a person.
And the rest of her, she like dissolved to mush and then poured into a septic tank. Oh, Faustina. Mm. She was just a lonely old lady. She got excited because she thought some guy had the hots for her. And then she gets hacked up and dissolved and eaten. Leonardo, what the fuck are you doing?
It's an excellent recap, Lacey.
Yeah. Are you okay over there?
I'm upset with her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Giuseppe's gonna be pretty upset. She made him eat somebody. He didn't even know it.
Well, yeah, him.
Her blood.
And other ladies in the town.
I also like that she was able to write a memoir. I'm kind of interested.
You can buy it.
I might. Let's see what else she does. I don't know if I want... Is she... Never mind. Just go ahead.
Okay.
Your opinion of her is still up in the air at this point?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Got it.
So, Leonarda, you would think, equal exchange, one life for another.
Mm-hmm.
She was not pleased with this murder. It was messier than she planned, and she worried that it was rendered useless because of that. She didn't think the equivalent exchange was going to work. So, with Giuseppe's safety on the line, she decided she needed to try again with another sacrifice.
I think has snapped in Leonarda.
Yeah.
Now it's snapped?
Yeah. After several weeks with no suspicions regarding Faustina's departure, Leonarda chose her next victim. Francesca Soavi was a former school teacher, an active member of the community, and a recent widow. She didn't have any children, but her disappearance would be noticed and missed by neighbors. It seemed that the only thing that she and Faustina had in common was desperation. Faustina was desperate for a husband, and Leonarda took advantage of that. Since the death of her husband, Francesca was desperate for a job. And again, Leonarda took advantage of that. On September 5th, 1940, Leonarda claimed to have found Francesca a job at a school for girls in Piazzi. No, Piacenza.
Okay.
Leonarda insisted that Francesca write letters to her friends detailing her trip so they wouldn't worry. She also told Francesca not to tell anyone in the community about the job for fear that they would try and convince her to stay. Then, before Francesca was to leave, they had a glass of wine to celebrate.
Oh no.
The wine was drugged, and Francesca quickly became disoriented. Again, Leonarda disappeared into the back room, only to return with the axe. This time, however, Leonarda was more confident, and she swung the axe directly into Francesca's skull. Francesca was killed immediately. Leonarda then began to rifle through Francesca's belongings, taking anything of value. I don't know if that's part of the equal exchange.
Or she just didn't want it to go to waste.
No, it's not part of the equal exchange. She was just... It was there, so I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
Is how I feel. Then Leonarda dismembered Francesca's body, taking more care because she wanted to use the flesh and fat to make soap.
No. No.
Again, the blood was dried and turned into tea cakes to be consumed, while the remaining, what she deemed useless, parts were tossed into a pot of caustic soda and then thrown into the septic tank. So, she used her blood to make tea cakes, she used the fat and flesh to make soap, and then the rest, septic tank.
I just watched a TikTok the other day. You know how sometimes you'll watch a whole TikTok and when it's over, you'll be like, I'm not going to do anything with that. I don't know why I watched it. I watched a whole TikTok on how to render tallow from beef juices. And then she was like, you can do all kinds of things with tallow. And one of the things was make soap. And in my, I can do that too brain, I was like, I could render tallow and then make my own soap. And now I'm disturbed at the thought of Leonarda rendering tallow from this lady's fat and making soap out of it.
And flesh. So according to Leonarda's logic, this killing of Francesca should have accomplished her goal. The law of equal exchange says that it needs to be easy. This one was done in one swing, so it was relatively easy compared to the first murder. So this should be it. She should be done.
Mm.
But as we know, serial killers, I think, need three people in order to be deemed a serial killer.
More than two, for sure.
I thought it's not the quantity, it's like
the quality.
Well, like
I think they need to have, I thought it was, to be called a serial killer, you need to have at least 3 victims, and you need to have like a common, like a ritual.
Let me Google it.
Okay.
You'd think we would have talked about this by now.
Well, no. Everybody just knows what it is. I'm going to move on until Bailey's ready to tell us about what an actual serial killer is.
Okay.
Virginia Cacioppo was a noted soprano who once sang at the famed La Scala Opera House in Milan. She was very popular around town, beloved and well-respected by the residents. She was like a local celebrity.
Doesn't sound like a good victim.
No. Virginia and Leonardo had actually become friends earlier, years earlier, until Virginia decided she missed the excitement of the city and wanted to move. For some reason, Leonardo took this as a personal betrayal and grew to resent Virginia.
I've felt that way about you as well.
Yeah, but you didn't kill me.
Not yet.
So, at the end of September 1940, which, if you're paying attention, this is a whole year after she's killed Francesca and, No, that's not true.
It wasn't one of Faustina, the 39.
She killed in 39. Then she waited, like, a year to kill Francesca. And then she waited, like, 2 weeks. At the end of September 1940, Leonardo had told Virginia of an available job in Florence as a secretary. On September 30th, 1940, just like the previous 2 victims, Virginia arrived at Leonardo's shop. But unlike the previous 2 victims, Virginia repeatedly refused Leonardo's offer for wine. Leonardo kept insisting and badgering her, so finally Virginia lamented and accepted the offer. But she sipped the wine, meaning it took longer for the poison to take effect. She actually was able to finish the entire glass, but eventually, sure enough, Virginia did become immobile. But unlike the other 2, she didn't really become disoriented. She was fully conscious. Leonardo carefully laid her on the floor of the shop and began removing all her expensive jewelry and anything of value, and pocketed it all. Then Leonardo left the room and returned with the axe. She raised it up above her head and brought it down on Virginia's chest. Several ribs were shattered with one blow. Leonardo later said that Virginia let out one small gasp, then died on the floor. Like she'd done with the other 2 women, Leonardo quickly dismembered the body, saving any usable parts for soap and tea cakes again. And in her memoir, she wrote, quote, "She ended up in the pot, like the other 2. Her flesh was fat and white. When it had melted, I added a bottle of cologne, and after a long time on the boil, I was able to make some most acceptable creamy soap. I gave bars to neighbors and acquaintances. The cakes, too, were better. That woman was really sweet."
Oh.
Gross.
I don't. Leonardo.
So I'm on the FBI website right now. Serial killings means a series of 3 or more killings, not less than 1, in which was committed within the U.S. having common characteristics, such as to suggest the reasonable possibility that the crimes were committed by the same person. There's also something, I mean, I read on Wikipedia, it was saying that there's, like, all within, like, a month or whatever of, like, a cooling off period, which...
I think that that's just, like, one of those...
I don't think you can add a cooling off period in there.
But I think that those are just, like, one of those things where it's, like, it's common, but not required. Yeah. Like, how taking trophies is common, but not required.
Yeah. I feel like Leonardo... I wonder how much Leonardo was influenced to, like, make the people into soap because it was wartime and everything was super rationed, and it like you had to make stuff yourself and it was hard to get stuff. Like, I wonder if it was different, like economic circumstances, if she would have just killed them and gotten rid of the body versus used the bodies, or if it would have had nothing, like no effect, if she would have done it anyway.
I kind of feel like, well, the reason she makes soap is to save money.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of the economy, because she started doing that, like, before the war.
Before.
I think that it's all just
her.
So, Virginia's murder was notably different than Faustina's and Francesca's. Virginia was like a celebrity with many, many ties to the community. Leonardo also didn't sneak up behind her with the axe to hit her in the back of the head like she'd done before. It's kind of like, I feel like she wanted Virginia to watch her kill her. And she also, instead of hitting her in the head, she hit her in the chest.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Which seems like it seemed more personal, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Also, she didn't have Virginia write letters to family members, and she didn't insist that Virginia keep any secrets from neighbors. And because of this, apparently Virginia ended up telling her sister-in-law, Albertina Fonti, about the potential job in Florence set up by Leonardo.
Mm.
Those are the ladies. Albertina grew suspicious of Virginia's sudden disappearance and went to Leonardo's house to confront her. Albertina was basically interrogating her at the front door, so Leonardo just apologized and closed the door on her face. Like, she's just like, I'm sorry. Albertina felt that that was weird, so she decided to start asking around town. In doing so, she learned that two other women had disappeared after going to Leonardo's shop. This caused Albertina to take her concerns to the Reggio Emilia police, and soon enough, an investigation into Leonardo was opened. At first, Leonardo denied the allegations, using her wonderful reputation as a mother of four and the town's sweethearted old woman to her advantage. In addition, she had been careful to cover her tracks. She did a very thorough job of cleaning up after herself. And there was really not a lot in the way of evidence for the investigators to work with. But what they did have were the postcards and letters that she had these women write.
Oh.
They were all mailed by Giuseppe. Like, Leonardo was like, hey, can you go drop these off at the post office for me?
Mm.
So once the authorities found out that, they began to assign blame to Giuseppe.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And
don't
in
you
an
dare
instant,
come after her son.
Yeah. So right away, her tune changed and she gave a detailed account of what she did. She immediately was arrested and taken to jail. But because the war was raging across Europe at the time, all local prosecutions were temporarily on pause. It was 6 years before she actually went to trial.
Holy cow.
So
war
in 19...
time. You expect.
Priorities, Lacey.
You're right, you're
got
right.
A war to end.
I mean, it's not like she was wandering the town or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, is that Giuseppe?
Yeah, that's Giuseppe.
Oh, aww. He's handsome.
Doesn't he kind of look like Ben Schwartz?
Yes.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of his name, but I was picturing him in my head, and then you said it, and I was like, yes.
Yes. So in 1946, Leonardo Cianciulli went to trial in Reggio Emilia. Her trial lasted only a few days, and during the proceedings, she never expressed any kind of remorse about what she had done. In fact, when prosecutors and other court observers got a detail or two wrong, she made sure to set the record straight. She was found guilty on 3 counts of murder. She was sentenced to 30 years in prison and 3 years in a criminal asylum. Remember what the fortune teller told her? No, you don't.
Yeah, well, she said something in one hand and something else in the other one.
In your right hand, I see a prison. In your left hand, I see a criminal asylum.
Yeah, that thing.
Paid better attention to that fortune teller.
Spooky. So, throughout her entire incarceration, she expressed no regret. She did what she had to do to protect her son, and she wasn't going to apologize for it. And she said it was completely worth it to ensure that he was safe. On October 15th, 1970... Oh, hold on. There's Leonardo and Giuseppe hugging after the verdict was read.
No.
That's her way she...
Do you think Giuseppe was like, thanks, Mom. Don't know if I can make this comment.
Well, Lacey just said thanks, Mom. So
I said thanks, Ma.
Well, I was thinking like he was like, oh, thank, like I'm finally like I have like some like time away from my overbearing mom now.
And I didn't have to, and I'm not like at a war.
Yeah.
To get away from her. I mean, maybe. On October 15th, 1970, Leonardo died of cerebral apoplexy, known now as, I think, a stroke.
Yeah.
In the Women's Criminal Asylum of Pozzuoli. Today, many artifacts from the scene of her crimes, including the pot in which she boiled her victims, are on display in the Criminology Museum in Rome. And as for the fortune teller's prophecies, although it seemed like most of them came true, it seems like I don't think she outlived her children. I couldn't find anything about the three, but I think Giuseppe died in 1976. So 6 years after Leonardo.
It does sound like if he only died 6 years after his mom, who was kind of old, it does sound like he died youngish. But, like, not before her, so.
Yeah. It didn't say, oh, your kids are going to die young.
Yeah.
It said you're going to outlive them all.
I wonder what would have happened if she, like, didn't. Well, I mean, know a lot of things in her life, but didn't go to the fortune tellers and, like, get these things in her head, like, to think about. Like, because what is it called? Like, self-fulfilling prophecy or something. Yeah.
And just, like...
I think some of... I mean, I think that the way she was overprotective of Giuseppe still would have been, because even without the fortune tellers saying anything, like, her kids were dying.
Yeah.
And I could see that if you've got one who's surviving and your kids are just dying one after another, that you would become insanely protective over that one, even if nobody had given you some kind of a fortune about it ahead of time.
I will say, I don't think that the fortune tellers helped.
Yeah.
They didn't ease her mind about anything.
No. So she died at the age of 76. And if Giuseppe indeed died in 1976, he would have been 54. So, I mean, he did die young, but, you know,
but not
as young as her other kids.
He survived World War II, which was exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, that's because his mom killed people for him.
I don't know if she killed all of them for him.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you guys thought if... You think that she really felt like she had to do... Like, I can kind of understand her reasoning for the first one. It didn't go according to plan. But do you think she really felt like she had to do the third one? Or do you think at that point...
Oh, I for sure feel like the third one was just like a...
Just for her?
Yeah. It was different, and it felt very personal.
Yeah. Felt like she had some beef with Virginia.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and she had like a personal issue with her. So that's what
I don't know how I feel about Leonardo. I mean, that's awful. Those were people's like family members and stuff that she hacked up and then made and just open ate their blood cakes. Oh, it's so gross. That wasn't good.
No.
That wasn't good.
Also, I feel like you keep saying it, like she's eating it. I also want to point out that she's like making Giuseppe eat it.
Yes.
And other people.
Yes. And then didn't she give her soaps to her friends and stuff?
And neighbors. Also, I did read, I don't know how true it is, but I did read somewhere that she, the one time, I think it was Virginia's soap, she like forcibly washed Giuseppe with it.
He was Why a grown is she up. Washing her son?
He was a grown man.
Yeah.
You know how in the beginning of the episode I was like, oh, I love handmade soap. Like, that's, like, I use handmade bar soap, like, for,
yeah.
Yeah, now I'm nervous.
Oh. Okay.
Would you guys feel weird if I started making handmade soap and I was like, I made you some soap?
I have enough beef juices.
I feel like I would prefer, because I would know if people around you were just disappearing.
Unless you were receiving letters from them.
What if she was picking up homeless
hitchhikers?
People? Yeah.
Well, if she lived alone, I'd be more concerned, but I feel like her mom is on top of her.
Mom would probably, and Levi would probably notice if there were people in a pot on the stove.
Yeah. Or just blood anywhere.
Yeah.
It's ketchup.
It's a lot of ketchup.
I really like
I do think I might buy the book. So the reason before I was like hesitant, because I was like, if she's still alive and I decide that I don't like Leonardo, I don't really want to buy something and like the money goes like to her estate. But she died, so I don't know who gets the money from the sale, but they can have it. I'm gonna go get that.
I also don't know. I don't know how that would work in Italy, but I know that the Son of Sam law.
Yeah, we have a law here in the United States. Yeah.
What's that one? Is that like the family can't benefit from?
Killers can't make profit over their
their crimes.
Memoirs or like interviews or stuff.
Okay.
Any money made from like a book that they write, it can't go to them.
Okay.
I think it goes to the victims. Cool. But then recently they like updated that so that like family members of murderers can't profit off of their crimes either.
Because didn't someone's like wife take money or something?
The guy that's being on trial for what was this? The Golgi Beach murders.
Gilgo.
What am I talking about?
I kinda like Golgi Beach.
I'm sure there's a place like that. Rex Huerman or something. His wife, I don't know if they've gotten divorced yet. I know that she's trying. Agreed to do like an interview or something for Billy money. A bunch of money.
Yeah.
So that's Leonardo Cianciulli.
That was a sad one.
Serial killer. Yeah.
Not just the people that, like, she killed, but, like, her life, her mom's life, like...
Yeah.
And I feel like every time her life started to even itself out, something went wrong. And sometimes it was her fault. Like, she sabotaged, like, when she stole that money and then killed people.
Yeah, those were definitely her fault. Yeah.
She had some options and some choices in those moments, and she chose wrong.
I was surprised by how recent it was for the first female serial killer, and she was killing people in, like, 39 and 40.
A lot of countries don't have serial killers.
No. I did read something interesting that was, like, some countries, this wasn't, like, a blanket thing for everybody, but there are certain countries that, like, still claim that they have zero. But it's just that they, like, don't want the stigma of it, so they, like, won't investigate. And they essentially treat them all as separate cases and, like, will not admit that they have serial killers.
Yeah. I've seen that too. But I've also seen, like, the numbers.
Yeah, we crank them out.
United States, we are winning by far. By so much.
There was another serial killer. It happened like in like the 18th century or something. In Italy. And she was a woman too. Let me Google her real quick.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know if I can say her name.
Try it.
No.
I want to hear how you do.
What's it look like?
It starts with a G and ends with an A.
Okay, hold on.
Yada.
Here, hold on. I'm gonna
Giovanna.
Send this to you guys. Because she poisoned people too, and I actually heard of her through.
Is it Giulia?
Yeah.
Julia?
That's Julia.
Okay, well, I'm gonna send you a screenshot of what she. Okay, don't send whatever. Fuck you, I guess.
Julia Tofana?
Yeah. She did like Belladonna, or she used Belladonna or something.
The Italian serial poisoner who became a legend.
You should do her next, since you can speak a little bit of Italian.
Just stick to the Italian theme for a little bit. See how far it carries you.
She killed hundreds of men in the 17th century Italy when she turned her makeup business into a poison factory, selling a deadly concoction called Acqua Tofana, thought that had been laced with arsenic, lead, or belladonna.
If we're going to be talking about this in another episode, stop. Yeah.
We've learned.
Cut
this out. We have to do... the teaser for next week, Bailey. It's another serial killer.
It's not, actually.
You're changing it?
Well, I mean, I am doing that one. I just have to read a book, and I'm not prepared to read the book yet.
Okay.
So it's a senseless murder of a spoiled brat.
Oh, so was it senseless? Because...
The spoiled brat.
I already feel a little bit of empathy. No,
no. Sorry. The spoiled brat causes the senseless murder. My bad.
I was going to say the senseless murder by a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
Got it. I'm going to try and guess which one it is.
It's not written down.
Then I don't know.
Or actually, I don't know. I don't know if I wrote it in the chat, but I'm not sure.
Whatever.
We'd be surprised.
All right, well, that was sinister.
And we are sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.